This is the Golden Thread Interviews with me, your host, Judy Murdoch. Today, I am so happy to be talking with Larissa Noonan. I have known Larissa for many years. She has been a friend, a colleague, and most recently, my teacher and guide. I've seen Larissa and her work evolve over the years. Three themes that have been consistent in her work are healing, empowerment, and learning to develop your resources to support your growth and learning. I love how Larissa turns into what is the next right thing and goes where those promptings take her. Larissa is kind, has great integrity, and is humble. She teaches through the example of her own growth and learning. I am profoundly grateful for her support in my journey. So, Larissa, thank you so much for being here.
It's an honor to be here with you, Judy. Thank you for the invitation.
Cool. Okay, so I've got some questions. And the first question I wanted to ask you was about owls. Because on your website, there's like kind of a fierce looking, kind of a badass owl. And, you know, so I was just wondering, what do owls mean to you and to your work?
That's a great question. And surprisingly, for how many owls there are on my website, nobody's ever asked me that. So, and as I'm thinking about it, it actually kind of mirrors a lot of other journeys in my life. I first started working with owl back in 2008, I believe. I had started doing a naturalist training course through Wilderness Awareness School. Mm-hmm. And one of the skills that they teach is something called owl eyes. And it's basically learning how to shift into your peripheral vision at will so that you are able to take in more of your environment. And for instance, if you're sitting in the woods, so that you can see more of what's happening around you. And also because it calms and soothes the nervous system. And so it makes you blend in a little bit more into the woods and you become less of a potential threat to the animals who live there. Mm-hmm. And so I started playing with owl eyes just kind of all the time. And I became more and more aware of how profoundly and quickly shifting into owl eyes would impact my nervous system, how I'd become my nervous system, my body would relax and become more settled just through that simple shifting from tunnel vision into peripheral vision or wide angle vision. And so I started teaching that to my clients. I had a body work practice at the time where I was doing body centered trauma healing work, helping people learn how to track what was happening in their bodies via sensations and how to do that in a way that led to healing and resolution versus versus just becoming overwhelmed by what they were experiencing. And I found that owl eyes was a great tool in helping people be able to notice sensations, be with sensations without becoming overwhelmed by the sensations that they were experiencing in their bodies. And so I actually created an ebook around that and an online course around owl eyes. And I went really deep into the practice of owl eyes, both for myself and with my clients. And it wasn't until several years later that I started to realize that owl herself is also a being and a spirit. Like, I'd been working with owl eyes and I'd also been working unknowingly with owl this whole time. And so it was this, you know, like profound revelation that I need to be honoring and like interacting with owl as a guide and as a teacher for me as well, in addition to using this skill called owl eyes. And so I started to deepen into that relationship, and owl has just been, for the past decade, one of my primary mentors, one of my primary guides in healing, in returning to wholeness, in presence, in being able to, you know, watch the little critters of my thoughts versus getting caught up in them. you know, all of those things. And so, you know, just so grateful to John Young and Wilderness Awareness School and the Kamana Naturalist Program that taught me allies, that led me to Al, and then just deep, deep gratitude to Al for all that she has and is in my life.
That's really cool. I think that's like such a great example of, you know, like when I talk about the golden thread, how mm-hmm. like you don't necessarily know where it's going to take you. You just kind of, you keep following, I'm not even sure. It always feels like it's like a prompting in your body or your spirit that like seems to lead you forward. And that's like, to me, like that's a really cool example of like not knowing where it's going to go, but then it makes itself known to you.
Yes, exactly. I feel like that's exactly how my entire life has been, just taking that next step, but with no true idea of where it's going to lead or where I'm going to end up. Yeah. It seems like some people have this kind of grand vision or something that they are aiming towards. And so they're taking the next step that's towards that vision that they have. That isn't really how it's been for me. Like, it's just always been taking the next step that is available to me.
I think, you know, having like knowing you and being a student, I would almost say that you may not have an articulated vision or something written down, but I do think that there are, I don't know if I would call them values or intentions, but I do think, you know, like healing, I think, you know, like true healing, like that always has felt to me like something that has always pulled you forward. And if I can just say one more thing about it, you know, like you were talking about, you know, going into the body and witnessing, you know, pain or discomfort, which is something really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And one, a thing that I've learned from you, which has been like incredibly valuable, is this idea of like, you know, like a lot of the healing I had experienced prior to working with you and similar teachers was talk therapy. And so like you tell stories and you tell them over and over again. And I found that there's definitely benefit in like sharing your story, like sharing a trauma with a therapist who is listening with empathy and compassion. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself, I think, is really healing. But I think also for myself and for a lot of other people, you can stay so stuck in that story because it's like we keep trying to like telling the story, and somehow by telling the story, somehow I'll own it or I'll be able to like dissolve it. And I think because like the trauma has like such a huge physical component in our body, it's like you can't like tell a story and it won't do anything to what is in your body. You really have to do that. I'm going to use the word somatic. Would that be mm-hmm. correct? So you really mm-hmm. have to like address the physical component. And I've also learned from you that you don't even necessarily have to tell the story or get too wrapped up in it. You know, we can go directly to the physical part of our bodies and begin just working directly with it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that is again where allies comes in so beautifully, because the sensations, if we are working with a sensation that has not been met or has not had a chance to like fully speak, it can be really overwhelming. And allies helps us to kind of stay on the edge of it, to stay in that more witness place, to stay in the softness around it versus being pulled so directly into it.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So there's another place I would go, but I think, so I'm going to ask you here. We could go talk more about like a project that you're working on that you're excited about, or we could go into ancestral healing, which to me is sort mm-hmm. of that second piece where it, you know, where it enables you to actually work with where that trauma is and be deeply supported. So where would you like to go? What's a good next place?
They're kind of the same question to me because every project that I'm working on involves ancestral healing at this point. So maybe give me a, like a guiding a plate, like an entry question, and I'll see where I can go with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so your work has that component of that, getting deeply in touch with your body, kind of getting out of your head and out of those like racing thoughts. And when we do that by just by very simply witnessing at the periphery of the pain, we're not doing anything to fix it. We're just looking at it with compassion. So that's like kind of a first step to sort of working with that pain and trauma that so many of us, a lot, we're kind of run by it in many ways unconsciously. But then there's the next step in a way, which is really like, then how do you really heal that trauma? We're witnessing it, and now, how do we take it to the next step, which would be, truly allowing it to heal?
Yeah, thank you for that. That takes me back a little bit to your question about, the vision piece and how you see that there have been something kind of pulling me forward. And I would say that maybe I don't have like a vision of how my life is going to look so much or what I need to be doing, but I have principles that guide me. And, one of those principles is, does it work? And I mean that from a perspective of like, if this, for instance, new healing approach that I'm wanting to try or that I'm feeling intrigued by and feeling called to try, does it lead to greater wholeness? Does it lead to greater integration within myself? Does it help me relate in a more loving and kind way to those around me, both human and other than human? So, is it truly effective and not just for myself, but for the wider web that I am connected within, that I am a part of?
That's a really great, just like it's a good discernment. I think like it's a good way to, because I was just before I spoke to you, for some reason I was thinking about the law of attraction. I might have, perhaps I read something that a person wrote about manifesting or something like that. And it made me think about like I was really into the law of attraction and sort of, satellite ideas for like a year or so. Really kind of dug into it. And, Larissa, it didn't work for me, and respect to people that perhaps like it has changed their life in great ways. But for myself, it was like, like one of the ideas is like, if you change your beliefs, you'll change your life. And changing your beliefs is damn difficult. I mean, that's where all that trauma is like all like cooped up in some place in us. And the belief is coming from a much deeper place, perhaps, than what we realize. Like, you can't talk yourself out of stuckness or out of like some really, deep, tender fear. So I totally agree with you.
So it's kind of so yeah, to tie that back into the ancestral work and into the projects, where I'm moving my work now. For myself, like there is, I found a lot of healing in the more somatic, body-centered trauma healing work, but there were still things in my own body and my own life that just were not responding and were still completely stuck, like you're saying, and that I just could not find any resolution or healing around. And so I had to keep looking to find the next thing that worked. And that led me into ancestral healing and into this understanding that the trauma and the pain and these patterns of suffering that I carry in my body and in my life are most likely not just mine. That they are coming from generations and generations of unresolved trauma and unresolved pain that has flown through the generations and landed in my body and in my life. And if there's any truth to that, then that means that if I'm trying to approach healing as a personal, as an individual journey, as like my healing journey, my pain, my suffering, I'm not going to get very far because it's not just my pain and my suffering. And we, this, I could be wrong about this, but this is my experience up to this point, that we can't heal another person's pain and suffering for them. And so that brought me to that next place of, well, what is going to help with this? And so I started exploring different avenues of ancestral healing, and I found that that worked. That as the generations of unresolved pain and trauma were healed, were brought to resolution, and my ancestors became well and vibrant again and strong in who they are, that healing came to me, and a lot of those patterns that before had been intractable began to loosen, begin to shift, begin to dissolve, and to transform. And it was amazing. It's miraculous. And it wasn't just serving me, it was serving all of life, because as my ancestors become more whole and become more well, I become more whole and I become more well, and I'm more able to serve others. And I'm more able to stand in the gifts that are mine, that are also of my people, and bring those into the world.
Can I I'm going to ask you for because I'm familiar with ancestral healing because that's what you and I have worked on. And you are, but for somebody who like ancestral healing is like a really new concept, can you like maybe explain it a little, like, kind of like the basics, just to help some people who like this is just like a really different idea for them?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you asked me that because I was thinking the same thing. Yes. So, ancestral, let me see where to begin here. So, let me provide a bit of a framework. For one, I am an animist. And this means that when I look at the world, I see more than humans as living, as incarnate, as capable of being in relationship with. So there is a life force that animates the trees, the birds, the grasses, the waters, the mountains. All of life has life, and we are able to be in relationship with tree people, with rock people, the same as we are able to be in relationship with living human people.
Can I just like put that, like add one little thing in there? So as somebody who's like, my background is Jewish, and I think your background is Christian. And so I myself like came to animism. Like I always thought of animism as like, that's like what indigenous people in the rainforest practice, or that's what the Native Americans did. And like, I think our Western culture, like we have, like we look at it as a little naive, like, oh, like, well, I'm a Christian and that's so much more. Like we're monotheist and we're so much more sophisticated. And what my own experience has been, and you can tell me if it's true for you as well, is that being an animist is not, doesn't make, like, I can't be like Judaism, it doesn't work for me, or Christianity. I think my ancestors who were Hebrews and were, basically migrated in the desert, I believe that they worshiped God, Yahweh. But at the same time, they also were like so deeply in tune with nature and their surroundings. And, and they did. I mean, there were many practices where you give thanks to the festival or you are, like there is ritual around nature and giving thanks, thank you for the harvest, thank you for the rains. So I think. I guess what I'm trying to say is the two are not incompatible. I think the two actually work very well together. At least that's just been my experience.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that and for bringing that into the conversation too. Yeah, that's my experience as well, and it's something that I'm exploring and learning more about now, which I'll talk about
Yeah,
here
no, that'd be
more in a
great.
moment. Let's see. So yeah, back to the
Tell me about the framework.
ancestors. Yeah, the framework. Thank you. So the ancestors with exist within this framework of animism, in that for most of the, like, this is how I grew up. This is how, most of the people who I grew up around viewed the world. Like when somebody dies, they go to heaven or they go to hell. and they're gone. Like, that's just it. Like, there isn't really the opportunity to continue some form of relationship. Maybe there'll be like a visitation in dreams from time to time or something like that. But in general, when someone's gone, there isn't a framework for continuing, for a continuing relationship. And so the ancestors are a collection of beings who have not been given personhood for a very long time, for many people, those of us at least in more of a Western culture. And so through beginning to be in relationship with our ancestors again, we are recognizing them as people. We are recognizing them as beings distinct from us, who we can be in relationship, who might actually not be fully well. That is another common misconception, kind of the idea that if you die, you just are automatically elevated and at peace. And in my experience working with my own ancestors and working with clients over the years, that's very much not the case. Sometimes it can happen that a person who is not so well when they are living transitions, and death is enough of a transition that they do become fully well in spirit. But often it's kind of like, if you're not so healthy when you're living and you pass, you're also not so so healthy as a spirit. And so there's often work that needs to happen there. And that's where, you know, that ties back into what I said earlier about these patterns of trauma being passed down through the generations. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of that, but if you are, you know, if you're listening and you want to know more about that, just Google epigenetics, because there's been a lot of research around this and how this actually happens on the level of of genetics.
That's really good. Like, I guess like an example, if I can like just share one from my own experience, is having, you know, for example, like just having a grandparent and, you know, like my grandfather. And so we can talk about these like lineages, you know, like a lineage would be my grandmother or my grandfather. And my grandfather had a lot of fear and worry in his life. And that, you know, came down from his own, you know, family. And so my sense when I began doing the healing work, you know, it's not that they, you know, a lineage doesn't want you to be well. I mean, there are sometimes like truly malicious spirits, but I think the vast majority of us don't have, you know, spirits who are really trying to hurt us or do mischief. Generally speaking, it's coming from a place of just wanting to protect. So my grandfather, for example, like in doing a business or being an entrepreneur, like my grandfather was just really nervous, like that a woman would be in business, you know, like, so there's this need to protect. But that comes through in my own life of me feeling really scared and insecure, and not realizing that there's also a presence in my life that's just trying to protect me. But it feels in my own life, it comes through as stuckness and feeling like there's something I want to do and I just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example.
And so by healing, you know, as we heal these beings, you know, as you said, like you just make, you have breakthroughs, and suddenly what felt so scary and impossible, you know, it's not so scary and impossible anymore. And, you know, we can take steps forward.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So in addition to like what you were talking about, sort of this idea of when somebody passes, they sort of, they may very much bring their own hangups, traumas, and things along with them into the next world. And they're probably still also, if there's no healing that's been done, you know, they are, you know, like, it's sort of like that, like a kind of like that chain of trauma doesn't get remedied. It just keeps going and affects us as well.
Yes, exactly.
And so when you are doing, when you are engaged in this healing work, Do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, maybe this is like a really great segue into what you're doing currently in your project, in that.
Yeah.
So Larissa, we were talking about, you know, lineages and being healthy or not healthy. And I was just sort of curious for yourself, where do your ancestors come from?
Yeah, great question. My people came over to Turtle Island, North America, from France, Switzerland, Poland, Germany, and Holland. They arrived here, most of them arrived here in the late 1800s, fleeing religious persecution. So they came here seeking freedom to believe what they believed and to be able to practice their beliefs freely.
And knowing too that that in itself, like any, you know, any of us who have had, who have people who have come to the United States, usually because we were running away from some sort of persecution. So that in itself, you know, like there's a lot of trauma in that, you know, that alone.
Absolutely.
And not
Absolutely.
Having any like maybe healthy, forgiving ways to look at it and treat it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then to tie this into the work that I'm doing now, I've been doing, you know, this work with helping people become more embodied, learn how to have healthy boundaries, all of which is part of the trauma work. And then also working to bring healing to their ancestral lineages for a number of years, for about a decade now, actually longer. And more recently, I've become more and more drawn to working with people who have backgrounds similar to me. Like my background is all of my four secondary lines as well. So all the recent generations have been fundamentalist Christians. And it's brought me to this question and this desire to explore deeply, like, how does growing up in a fundamentalist culture affect how we are living now, and how does that impact how the world is operating around us? Because at this point, like living in, like in North America in particular, the United States in particular was founded by, I would call, I mean, just to use it simple, by fundamentalist.
No, you're absolutely right. I wanted to ask you, Larissa, like, how would you define fundamentalism?
The way I think about it is fundamentalism, I think about it as being a worldview that is binary in nature, meaning things are divided into right versus wrong, good versus evil, heaven versus hell, us versus them, man versus woman, and there being a right one of each of these things. So just in the man versus woman, like the man is elevated, the woman is in service to the man within a household, generally within a fundamentalist household. We want to go to heaven. We don't want to go to hell. We want to be a part of the right community so that we can be the ones who are going to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. Another binary would be, you know, sinner versus saved. And until you are saved, you're not, you know, part of the community who is good, who is right, who is living in the right way, has the right beliefs, and who is going to heaven. So there's a lot of pressure there.
Can I ask you a question about that then?
Yeah.
This is related, I think, to where you're going. So how does that, like, how does that become like an environment where trauma happens? Like how does the damage happen or the pain happen?
That's a good question. This is the way I'm holding it right now. And again, I might be wrong around this, but my sense is that it's trauma that leads to this split, in that trauma happens, or something happens that where there isn't healing or there isn't the holding that's needed for whatever that thing that happened to be resolved, whether in an individual or whether in maybe a community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be, yeah, there's a lot of examples that are coming to mind. You know, it could be like a plague going through and a bunch of people dying all at once. Or it might be just like on an individual level, like within a family, where a child dies young for some reason, and then just the pain of that is not able to be expressed or able to be held. And then mm-hmm. that gets carried down, and there becomes perhaps a pattern of children dying young within a single mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm.
Can I share something, like, this is just from my own uh-huh. experience? So I'm thinking, again, sort of in the Jewish culture, there was a time when women were priestesses. Mm-hmm. You know, they had roles. They were valued as part members of the community, and they had roles in the temple. Mm-hmm. And then during the diaspora, you know, when Jews, like, were leaving the Middle East and going all over the world, you know, it was like, you know, the time of rabbis began, where, you know, the men were the ones who did the teaching and the leading, and they mm-hmm. were the spiritual leaders, and they were the ones who, you know, in all ways. And so the role of a woman, you know, like going from being a priestess and somebody who is valued in your community for being wise and knowing rituals or whatever. And now it's like, no, your job is to have babies mm-hmm. and to keep the house and mm-hmm. to, so that the men, you know, can be the ones who get to study and you know, speak mm-hmm. Hebrew. And that would be, like, so, like, your sense of value as a human being would just be crushed.
Yes.
You know, you go from being someone honored in the temple to being, no, your job is to take care of babies, and that's it. And we are not interested in anything you might have to say on the matter.
Yeah, so, you know, my curiosity there would be, like, what caused that shift? Like, what happened to make it seem like this is what needs to happen for us to be able to be a functioning, safe community?
And I think so often, don't you, it's like, it's what you just said, like, it's a trauma to the community. So with the Jews, I think, you know, like, being on the run, get mm-hmm. or, you know, like, you know, you keep getting kicked out of one country after the next. And I mean, to me, like, you would cling then to your rituals, and things would just become very, I think, to me, like, really prescribed, you know, mm-hmm. like, because it gives you that sense of control. Like, we have these blessings, we do this at this time, this at that time. Like, you have, like, huge amounts of structure, mm-hmm. which can be really comforting and mm-hmm. feel really safe, but there's no room at all for, you know, just being human and being different. It's like, you fit or you don't.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's, you kind of just laid out what I was about to say, which is, you know, my premise is that, you know, some form of trauma happens and it's not resolved. And so when we have trauma living in our nervous systems, we don't feel safe. And there's all this fear that we're not able to meet because there's not enough, you know, fear or other feelings, grief, you know, whatever it may be a part of that trauma that we're not able to meet because there's not enough safety for those feelings to be met. Mm-hmm. And so instead we try to control things.
Right.
And that split happens in order to try to, like, create a world that it feels safe. Like, this is where things are right. This is where we know what to do. We know who to trust because they're all doing the right thing.
Right.
And then whoever isn't doing those, you know, what we say is, you know, following the right beliefs or the right rules or whatever it is, they are other. And they are not safe. And then it sets up these whole, you know, ways of, well, if they are other and they aren't safe, they might harm us, and then we are justified in harming them.
Yes.
So it goes pretty yeah. deep pretty fast.
And that brings up all the colonialism, and which is, like, you know, been a huge, like, traumatic force, both mm-hmm. for, you know, the white people who were responsible for a lot of the, you know, colonization in North America, for example, mm-hmm. you know, and what's happened to the indigenous people. But as a perpetrator, that is trauma too.
Yeah.
That brings its own damage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't become, it becomes much, I mean, like you're saying, like what I'm hearing you say is that the issue becomes less black and white. It becomes more nuanced when you're like,
Right.
okay, the perpetrators are also, they're committing harm and perpetuating trauma, but also they are being traumatized at the same time. And then if we
Right.
look into our lineages, we're going to most likely find, patterns of both perpetration and of victim in our own lineages.
I think that's like a really profound and useful insight for everybody to know that. Like none of us are pure and none of us are like have totally evil lineages. Like that's very unusual. It feels to me like it's the human condition.
Yeah. No, I would say
Trump.
no one has fully evil or fully good lineages.
Yeah, and I mean to be human is to have
Yeah.
experienced trauma in our own lives and in like our ancestors and their lives too. So all of us, like every person to me, is walking around with some hurt and some trauma that lives in their bodies and their DNA.
Yeah.
And I think like, so Larissa, kind of asking you now about this project that you're doing with fundamentalism, are the participants people who come from a fundamentalist background, or are they people for, I mean, or and are they people that like the theme of fundamentalism just resonates for them?
It's a bit of both. Right now, I am running a 5-month, it's kind of a beta program. I'll be launching it more officially next year. But it's a program for people who know that they are healers, who know that they are witchy, earth-connected healers in some way, and who
Like
come
the
from a
word witchy.
yes. Yeah, I call it the Witchy Healer Program. And but who come from a fundamentalist background. And it is a bit of both. Several of the, probably 75% of the people in the program have, like direct fundamentalist ancestors, and maybe even were raised in a like fundamentalist, some sort of generally Christian home, because that's my background, although anyone who's drawn to the work would be welcome. And then there are a couple who are just like recognizing that theme of fundamentalism in the world and in their lives and in their bodies and wanting to work with that directly. Because, like you were saying before about like the women priestesses being silenced, that's a real potent example of one of the themes that we're working with. Like, how do everyone in the program currently is are women, and how do we as women reclaim like our power and our healership and to be able to stand in our full witchiness and our full witchy power. And so working that, working with those themes of, this is one of the themes that we're working with, is how the women in our lineages were silenced, and bringing healing to that so that we can then be standing in our strength instead of in the fear of conforming and of, what horrible things are going to happen to us if we are true to who we are in the world and to the gifts that are ours to give.
Yeah, witchy women, man. They're scared. They're threatening, I mean, powerful women, So there was like something I wanted to ask you about that. Oh, I know what I wanted to like kind of make a commentary perhaps, but one of the things that I love about the ancestral healing specifically and the work that you're doing is that it benefits like manifold. It benefits the person being healed. It benefits our ancestors, so our lineages. It benefits our families because as we are healing, like literally healing that DNA, our family is experiencing that, whether they receive it or not. And it also allows us to kind of, be in the world as like a positive force primarily, right? Because we're not being run anymore. Like we're not being our actions, decisions, we're not like being run unconsciously by those pains and traumas anymore.
Yes.
Which makes us not perfect, but far more able to, I guess, like, I'm going to say, like, a force for healing and a force for good in a world where there's a lot of trauma and pain.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is one of the things I love about you is, you know, being a teacher. It's, you know, it's just such a, it's just you offer so many, so much, like a gift, I guess I'll just say.
Thank you. As you're talking, what's coming to mind for me is thinking about ancestral healing in terms of, so we, here we are in our like little individual lives, and we have all these things that we're struggling with. And then we start to realize that, hey, maybe all this that I'm struggling with isn't just mine. And so we turn our attention to being in relationship with our well ancestors and bringing healing to those who are not well. And all of a sudden, and then like bringing those, that healing to us as well, into our own bodies, into our own DNA, and our life shifts and our lives change. And it's almost like we reach a place where our lives are now our own, where yes, like we may continue to experience trauma because we live in a very, like you said, traumatized world. And as I see it, trauma is just a part of life. And so, but when we experience something that's potentially painful in our lives, it's just ours.
Yeah,
like
that's
it's
a
not
really
being
good way to say
exacerbated
it.
By everything else that resonates with that same pattern from our
Right.
ancestry as well. And not only is it just like true to this current moment and to this lifetime, we have all this support and backing from the well ones, from our ancestors who are now well, to help with the holding and the healing. And so we are much more likely to not just recover, but to receive the gifts from that experience and be able to pass that greater capacity for healing on to the next generations.
You know, what you said there, what it made me think in my own experience again, was that it's the difference between, I think, how most of us operate in the world, you know, and I am by no means immune to behaving in this way. But I think most people, you know, we kind of live in our egos and our heads. And so kind of like to feel okay, feel happy, it's very dependent on what is outside of ourselves. So it's really dependent on, okay, you know, like I have this idea, do people like it? Do they not? And you know how it is, you know, people are fickle. The world is fickle. Like somebody may like something one day, they don't like it the other day. You know, our partner may be nice to us one day and not the next, or a kid might say something mean to us. And it's just so easy to get kind of knocked around with our egos. And so the only tool we have there usually is something like, okay, I'm going to achieve more. I'm going to get more money. I'm going to buy a cute pair of sandals or something like that. You know, which like it's like that acquisition thing. It feels good for like a nanosecond. And then you're back with like this little like balloon ego that's just like getting slammed around in the world. And so when we heal ourselves and we heal our lineages, and also we are, you know, more deeply connected in an animist way to these other spirits and beings in the world, for me, like the image for me is like, I can be standing there, but I have this sense of being really deeply held and supported by my ancestors, by the oak tree next door, by all these other like energies. And so it's like you are in community. It is community. It may not involve like human beings, but this is a community that just always surrounds and supports you. And so I know for myself, it makes it much, much easier to take an unpopular position. And I think for me, again, this goes back to this golden thread idea, that the golden thread takes us where it's going to take us. You know, it's usually to what maybe we want to call our destinies or purpose, like our highest and best use. And to do that, you need support. You can't do it on your own. And my goodness, you can't just do it, you know, like hoping like your little ego is going to be, like, oh, that's so hard.
Yes, exactly. And I would add to that that the more support that we feel, the less fear we have running through our nervous systems, and the more we are then able to, not just, you said take an unpopular stand. Like, we're able to take an unpopular stand, and we're also able to more fully listen to other people who have different views.
Yes, absolutely. No, very good point.
And so we begin to dissolve that binary a bit between, with as the healing happens in us, the binary starts to dissolve within us, the fundamentalism within us starts to dissolve. And then we are more able to bring that out into the world too, through, instead of when somebody says something that is different than the way we see the world or the way we believe, instead of being threatened by that and feeling like then they need to be corrected or maybe even harmed in some way or shamed in some way, we can be like, hey, tell me more about that.
Yep.
And we can start building bridges. And I see that as so needed right now. And that is, for me, why this like study into ancestral healing with the fundamentalism theme being predominant is so important, because we live in such a polarized world right now, which to me is fundamentalism.
I find it very troubling. It feels like the wrong direction. It's not the direction that is going to lead to.
But yet, I just heard you speaking to
the wrong direction. Yes.
I also just heard you speaking to a direction that to me feels more integrated and more harmonious and more hopeful. That piece of recognizing and allowing yourself to receive the support of the natural world around you, of the unseen world, and leaning into that versus, reacting out from this place of trauma and from fear.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Not always.
Yeah.
But when
it's
a
practice, we're learning.
That's a really good way to put it. It's a practice. And it takes practice.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, and maybe you've already touched on this, but and I want to be really respectful to our time. What challenges you, right now? Like, what would you say if your fairy godmother came down with a magic wand and said, Larissa, I'm going to free you from, this one thing? Like, what would you ask your fairy godmother for?
I would ask my fairy godmother for more of a in-person living human community who holds this animistic perspective, and who is working towards being those bridges through, to dissolving those binaries.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
And I definitely have living people in my life who are doing this work for sure. Mm-hmm. Just not so much who I can wave to as they walk past my house.
No, I hear you. I mean,
so,
maybe.
Yeah, more in the actual geographical physical location where I live. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm seeking and what I would ask for.
Well, may it be so.
Thank you.
In the near future.
Thank you.
So in parting and wrapping things up now, what can people do? Like, if somebody is inspired by our conversation and wants to know more about you, what should they do? Where can they find out more about you?
Yes, thank you. LarissaNoonan.com, LarissaNoonan.com. And if you are intrigued and want to begin a relationship with Al, you can sign up for my newsletter list and receive my Dissolving Overwhelm with Al ebook and start your own journey into Al Eyes and into a relationship with Al.
Cool. I like that. So just in parting words, having been your client, I really have benefited so much for the work we've done together. I will add as just a little, like, I don't know, like a testimonial, I guess, that Larissa's work is very, it's very straightforward. It's very gentle. It's very easy to follow. So, I guess the way I would put it is, she introduces these ideas in a way that's extremely accessible. So you're not going to have to learn a lot of things really fast. Most of it is just doing learning one small thing each day and putting it into practice. So I highly recommend her work.
Thank you, Judy.
Oh, thank you. So this was absolutely delightful. And I hope you enjoyed it too.
Very
And
much.
just thank you so much for, making your time available and meeting with me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Judy. It's been
Cool.
good to be here with you and with yours.
Awesome.